Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is MPB News.
Hi, this is Karen Brown. Thanks for checking out the Mississippi Edition podcast. If you like what you hear, click subscribe, hit like, or leave us a comment if your app has that feature. Then find other MPB podcasts by searching MPB Think Radio on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks. Good morning, I'm Karen Brown, and this is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, Mississippi's healthcare system reaches the brink as COVID cases and hospitalizations reach new highs in the state. Then, a new report from the Trust for America's Health examines the impact of the pandemic on communities facing food insecurities. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Hospital beds in Mississippi are filling up with coronavirus patients, and emergency rooms are giving up space to assist with the high demand for advanced medical care. Yesterday was a new record day for COVID-19 cases in the state, as the Department of Health reported over 1,200 new confirmed infections. Over the past 8 days, COVID-related hospitalizations have continued to climb to a record 855. Dr. Andy Wilhelm is director of the Medical Intensive Care Unit at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. He tells MPB's Kobe Vance the novelty and severity of the disease presents a series of challenges.
This disease is exceedingly complex. One, it's a new disease, so we don't know everything about it. Two, what we do see is multi-organ failure, which we see on a routine basis in non-COVID patients, but not to the level that we're seeing it in the COVID patients.
You know, we're talking about stress. What does that mean for the ICU? How does that stress impact the day-to-day activities that y'all have to accomplish?
So we've got a lot more sick people with an illness that is a lot more demanding because the people are so sick, and we have to see them all. So it's more work in a system that was designed for a lesser amount of work than is required right now.
And so what do you think, looking into the future, what do you think is going to happen as we see cases continue to rise? Do you think, for one, do you think the ICUs in Mississippi, and specifically your ICU, are going to be overwhelmed? And if so, what could happen?
I really hope that we don't get to a point of a situation like they had in New Orleans after Mardi Gras or something like New York where they were completely overwhelmed. We've been able to manage the amount of overwhelm thus far, but we do have more ICU patients than we have ICU beds at this point. So, yes, we are overwhelmed. Yes, we anticipate becoming more overwhelmed, but we're hopeful that we will never get to a point that New York or New Orleans were in, you know, earlier in the spring.
So what does that look like for a patient in the ICU? What kind of systems go into helping keep that person in stable condition?
A lot of it's reactive and keeping up with the changes in the patient's physiology. We think about life support. Life support is historically thought of as the ventilator or the breathing machine. When they start to go into respiratory failure, we'll put them on the breathing machine, which is a plastic tube down into the lungs, and then we blow air into the lungs instead of the patient sucking the air in. What we're also seeing is kidney failure, so they're on dialysis. We're seeing heart failure, so they're on medicines to keep their heart squeezing. We're seeing blood pressure drops, so they're on medicine to keep their blood pressure high enough to be compatible with life. We're seeing strokes. We're seeing inflammation of the brain that can cause them to act funny in a delirious sort of way. It's a multi-organ disease that requires multi-organ support, and I would say that is life support.
And how long are people usually there?
In the intensive care unit, and anywhere, it ranges anywhere from 2 or 3 days to a month, maybe longer. Some people, once they clear the virus, remain critically ill. They've sustained permanent lung damage or permanent organ failure that will not recover. And so they're left on machines to keep them alive, and their likelihood of coming off is exceptionally low. So they remain in the intensive care unit because we can't provide those support services anywhere else, but they're no longer infected with the virus. They're just left with damage.
Is there anything else that stands out to you that you want people of Mississippi to understand about the role ICUs play right now in the middle of the COVID pandemic?
We still don't know who gets sick from this virus. The initial thought of this is predominantly a disease of the older population with chronic illnesses. What we observed in the ICU is obesity and diabetes take age off the table. Anyone who is overweight, anyone with diabetes, or anyone who has both is at risk for critical illness from COVID. So this is a disease of all age groups, and we all need to be careful, not just the elderly and chronically ill population that we initially thought.
Dr. Andy Wilhelm is the director of the medical ICU at UMMC, the state's only Tier 1 trauma facility. The high demand for beds to treat COVID patients is also straining the hospital's emergency capabilities. Dr. Reza Moriarty is vice chair of emergency medicine. She says the trend of rising cases means the threat is far from over.
It means the surge is not over. It means, there's really not an end in sight. This is the surge that we have been expecting since the middle of March. It didn't happen exactly when we thought it would, but here we are. And it means to me that unless we start doing some things like really social distancing and wearing masks and washing our hands, this will continue to get worse.
And so recently, what has life looked like on the insides of the hospital? How are patients being cared for? How are doctors handling this insane increase of patient needs?
Well, we are doing the best we can. We, in emergency medicine, we are accustomed to stress and accustomed to the unpredictable nature of the emergency department. But this is unlike anything we've seen in decades. We have a lot of patients boarding in the emergency department, waiting on ICU beds, waiting on regular med-surg beds because the hospital has no capacity. We have then patients in the waiting room, so there's a cascade effect. Where we'll have a lot more patients in the waiting room because we have no room in the emergency department. That puts a lot of stress on the system. It creates a situation where nurses, techs, doctors don't feel they can take a break.
And so when it comes to the demand of care that COVID patients need, what impact is that having on the emergency aspect of hospitals?
Well, so COVID patients need to be isolated. We have to wear PPE to go in the room. We need negative pressure rooms for them or rooms where the air can be sterilized. So all of those are new stresses on our system that we haven't had before. We have had to convert part of the emergency department to a dedicated COVID area with those special air filters. We have to don and doff PPE before we go into those rooms. All of that slows down patient care and makes it more difficult.
When you see that numbers are increasing like this, and we see the hospitalizations are going up every single day, what concern does that have to you for the state's, for your hospital's ability to care for patients?
Well, we're already seeing limited capability of the major hospitals in Mississippi to take care of patients. Our ICU is full. The ICUs of all of the major hospitals in the state are full. So we have smaller hospitals that are having to turn out of state or you know, having to send their patients great distances to find an ICU bed. Ultimately, if things don't change, you know, we may be in a situation like other, like Texas, Arizona, where we have to bring in, you know, some other resources, where we have to bring in other healthcare providers from outside the state, and set up, you know, other types of hospitals to care for these patients.
Dr. Risa Moriarty is vice chair of emergency medicine at UMMC. Mississippi has seen more than 11,000 new cases in the month of June. Stay up to date with the latest in coronavirus-related news by visiting mpbonline.org/coronavirus. Coming up, a new report from the Trust for America's Health examines the impact of the pandemic on communities facing food insecurities. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
If you're a parent on the go but still want to stay informed about your children's education, subscribe to Mississippi Education Connections podcast and listen on the go anytime, anywhere on your favorite podcast app.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Karen Brown. School closures coupled with the economic pressures of the COVID-19 crisis are causing children to experience food insecurity at unprecedented rates. A new report released yesterday by Trust for America's Health examines policies and recommendations that are being implemented by local, state, and federal officials, as well as school systems, to protect against child hunger during the ongoing pandemic. Adam Lustig is with Trust for America's Health. He tells and shares more about the report with us.
We looked at publicly available sources of data, both for the percentage of students enrolled and free and reduced breakfast and lunch programs, in addition to the health impacts of these very important programs.
Let's go straight to Mississippi. What are some of the key findings?
So for Mississippi, in our report, we highlight that 75% of children in Mississippi are enrolled in free or reduced priced breakfast and lunches. In the U.S., over 50% of children qualify for the program, and Mississippi actually has the highest percentage of any state of students who qualify for these programs.
How have the schools or other organizations done in feeding kids during this pandemic when they're not in school?
Schools have done an amazing job at adapting essentially overnight to school closures to ensure that students who rely on nutritious meals in schools can still access that food. So we've seen schools setting up a meal pickup sites. Sometimes that's at a school, sometimes it's at a different location. We've seen some school districts utilize buses that go on a regular route to deliver meals at specific times. And in some rural areas, we actually identified some schools that are doing individual delivery by buses to students. And I think this is all just in recognition of how important school breakfast and lunch is, not only in terms of the cognitive and academic benefits of these programs, but also realizing that for many of the students who qualify for these programs, this is often the only source of nutritious meals that they have every day.
What about the nutritious component of this? What is the importance that a child gets a breakfast and a lunch that is packed with nutrition?
So research has shown that high-quality meals improve academic performance and childhood cognition. Additionally, there's been research that was published that shows that student participation and school breakfast programs reduces students' body mass indexes, or BMI, and may reduce weight gain. And these two things are critically important parts of obesity prevention programs overall.
Which is also a big concern in Mississippi. As children start to go back to schools, there are questions about whether they'll be able to eat in the cafeteria, how many will be in schools, how many will be doing distance learning, or a combination of the two. How can schools best address that as kids come back?
Well, I think the first thing that we prioritize is ensuring safety. So safety for the students, safety for the families that they're returning to after school, and also safety for the school personnel, both teachers and other staff who are actually delivering these meals to students. We've seen some school districts looking at actually having children and students eat meals in their classrooms, so that way they're not in a large congregate setting. And then there's one federal program that we highlight in our report called the Pandemic EBT program. And so this actually provides a financial benefit to families of up to $5.70 per child per school day that essentially allows for families who are unable to access meals in schools to be able to utilize that benefit and purchase meals and food from grocery stores where they would otherwise be provided by the schools themselves.
For those children who won't be returning to the physical building, for whatever reason that might be, what do you recommend for their families at home to prepare nutritious meals for their kids?
And so in terms of preparing nutritious meals, I think that the first thing that I would highlight is being able to utilize the benefits and programs that are available to them. We are also advocating for expanding benefits for families to be able to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables. As we know, fresh fruits and vegetables are highly nutritious, and so we're really looking at all avenues to encourage families to utilize their foods and their diets on a regular basis.
Adam, where can people access this report?
The report is available on our organization's website. So my organization is the Trust for America's Health, and our website is tfah.org. And on that website, we have a whole page dedicated to COVID-19 resources.
Great. Adam Lustig is the manager at Trust for America's Health. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Mississippi Edition podcast from MPB News and MPB Think Radio. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already, and if your app lets you, leave a comment or review. We really do appreciate it. Remember, you can always get in touch with MPB News on Facebook and Twitter, and fresh episodes of the podcast are posted every weekday morning. I'm Karen Brown. Thanks for listening. This is Mississippi Edition from MPB Think Radio.